Hi, everybody, and welcome. I think it's to our 49th of these glamour, dissipation of glamour webinars.
Yes.
Any correction there?
That's correct.
Okay, excellent. Well, you know, the number 49 is an important one, seven sevens, and the Tibetan has been telling us that by the time we are 49 or 49 years into some process, it should really be under the seventh ray and very stabilized. We should be in the right place, doing the right thing at the right time. I wonder how many of us can say that we do that. Maybe we can. It would be nice if we could. Now, well, the world is certainly volatile, isn't it? We've been, working with this ASK program, meditating in the way that the Tibetan advised us to for the reappearance of the Christ every week, and for the attracting money for hierarchical purposes every week, and strengthening the triangles, and then doing some emergency work, you might say. It's the soul of nations meditation on Saturdays coming up. We're on the 5 p.m. schedule, and we certainly see that the balance is not yet achieved. Pretty much anger, aggression, separation, a lot of these things are operative at this time. And of course we see a dramatic kind of standoff going on between North Korea and the United States. Who knows where that will end? But we have this glamour where fear and hatred kind of combine, fear, hatred, and egotism. And when you get that cocktail going, it's a tough one because each of the parties wants to emerge victorious according to the dictates of the lower ego, and they fear they might not, and they hate the opponent who stands in the way of that kind of emergence. So these are things that we really have to cast away from our development and cast away from the our behavioral tendencies. Well, it's such important work. The Tibetan has given us such very important work. And it is, of course, esoteric work. And a lot of people would say, well, look, what are you doing here? The world is in trouble. Why don't you do something? But we know something about the power of thought and the power of the creative imagination. These kinds of efforts are operative in probably a number of places in the world. And when Olivia Tuya and I got together on this, we decided that we should try to help the psyche of humanity, which is in a very unstable condition. Now, Libra is such an important sign, and as you know, we're not far away from it at all. I think it's at 8:01 and 44 seconds GMT tonight, that we have, this is just in 3 hours really, that we have actually the ingress into Libra. And that ingress brings the beginning of this balancing energy, which has so much to do with peace and harmlessness. One of my colleagues sent me a notification about the United Nations Peace Day, and it was so close to the ingress into Libra. I said, well, somebody in that organization knows the astrological timing. It's very probable. So we want to take advantage of the stabilizing quality of Libra. Now, many generals who have led troops in war have had Libra as a major sign in their chart. Libra, Scorpio, and Sagittarius seem to be the signs that are prominent in these military directors. But of course, we can use the Libran energy to together invoke the spirit of peace, a great interplanetary being, and functioning on the second ray in a way. And yet, since Shambhala is the place of pure and perfect peace, there is that first ray component as well. We can invoke the spirit of peace, and we can really use this energy to build the peace in our groups and wider groups and communities and nations and internationally, ideally. So we're working on this illusion of separativeness or of separation. It's a natural illusion which comes from misidentification. Misidentification, our consciousness somehow takes a look at what we have, you know, our physical body and our feelings and our thoughts, our mind, and so forth, and identifies with those factors. And this is a great mistake, and we have to learn how to pull back. And it's hard, you know, because we've been doing it for so many millions of years, but how to pull back and realize that this vehicle, this threefold, fourfold vehicle, is simply an instrument for a being who stands behind all of this, the soul, and ultimately the soul of humanity. So when we begin to feel that we are truly agents, not only of our, so to speak, own soul, it's a misnomer really, but of the soul of humanity, then we are arriving into the second aspect of divinity. And these kind of egotistical glamours and the fears surrounding them and the hatred surrounding them will disappear. So I've been emphasizing it quite a bit. It's right identification which counts, right identification. And we have our identify as being group where we're taking up these matters again, trying to understand what our true nature as being really is. So if you want to participate in that process, please do write Brett, BrettM77@gmail.com. Okay, I think we're going to take a few little paragraphs here. We've been looking at the word hatred, and here is a person called JSP from the discipleship books. Let's see if I can find this person. Her name was Tomira Zori, Joy, Stability, and the Plan. She didn't stay with the group long, maybe just for one cycle, small cycle. The stability, I guess, wasn't there. But anyway, DK says, the tension of fear. Now, these are the code words. Fear, hatred, egotism. The tension of fear is great in the world today. People everywhere are living under great strain. DK said, look, you know, the war can't go on too long here because the strain upon people might lead to their defeat, the defeat of humanity, no matter who won the war. Forget not that it is the few in every land, and when I say in every land, I make no exception, who bring about world evil. This was not just planetary evil, but it was an attack of cosmic evil, which has its source, believe it or not, in very high places on the cosmic astral plane. Even though that is a great plane of love, still there is a kind of nest of cosmic evil on that high level. But I would have you remember also that the will of the masses of the people, unless misled, see, we really we can really count on that, but a lot of misleading is going on with this so-called fake news and just out and out lying to delude people. So in general, the will of the masses of the people, unless misled, And we have to have the discrimination, the discernment to determine what is the misleading that's going on. So much of it is towards good and understanding. I'm talking here in connection with world affairs. Stand steady, therefore, and permit no thoughts of hatred and fear. See how they go together to find lodging in your mind. Really, fear is the greatest of all glamours in a planetary sense. I think it's an inheritance from the moon chain, maybe from an earlier solar system too. And it characterizes not only human beings, but members of the animal kingdom. And if we go down deeply enough, maybe in the plant kingdom, there's a kind of a recoil, which is akin to fear. Stand firmly for good. You know, be in good standing, as they say. Usually that means you pay your dues, but, you know, to be in good standing. Looking for it in all peoples and races, and thus seek to swell the rising tide of those who aspire to right human relations, knowing that the potency of love, rightly expressed, is great. You know how he qualifies these things. You know, it rightly expressed, we have to have some wisdom on the love wisdom ray in the expression of love. The potency of love rightly expressed is great and is at this time the only factor that can offset hate. And when you see some of these some of these rallies, you know, and the standoffs that are happening between the police force and the ethnic communities, especially the black community, you know, who are so often mistreated by rather racist police force. You see the international hatreds and fraught relationships. It seems a long way from the possibility of love. But we, in our subjective way, have to flood the world with love and goodwill and somehow express this in our own daily life, and it will gradually catch on and be the quality of energy which is meant to characterize humanity before so very long, leading into that great era of peace which has been foretold in the prophecies. I mean, after all, the Christ, the returning Christ, the reappearing Christ, is the Prince of Peace and very much connected with this spirit of peace, a great being who works in Shambhala but still has still higher origins, an interplanetary kind of avatar or being, just the way the avatar of synthesis is. Well, here's a little bit, you know, these thoughts are from Education in the New Age. You know, it's a very timely book, even though it was written long ago. We really have to change our educational system in light of hierarchical values. And I know a lot of the people who function as disciples in esoteric groups and in esoteric schools are in the educational field. So here he decries the way our history is taught and our civilizations are represented. In the teaching of history, for instance, are we to revert to the bad old ways wherein each nation glorifies itself at the expense frequently of other nations, in which facts are systematically garbled, you know, according to one's desire for ascension, in which the pivotal points in history and the various wars down the ages, let's see, in which the pivotal points in history are the various wars down the ages. The history, therefore, is very Martian, isn't it, of aggression, of the rise of a material and selfish civilization, and one which had the nationalistic and therefore separative spirit, which has fostered racial hatred and stimulated national prides. I mean, are we to go back to that, he's saying? And there are, you know, people who are still so egotistical in their consciousness that they would prefer that their country come first above all other countries. You know, we have the German song, Deutschland, Deutschland über alles, you know, Deutschland, Germany above all. And now we have a replay of the America First policy, which had a sort of ignominious history back at the time of the lead up to the Second World War. The first historical date remembered by the average British child is William the Conqueror, 1066. The American child remembers the landing of the Pilgrim Fathers and the gradual taking of the country from its rightful inhabitants. This is very interesting, as DK sees it. And perhaps the Boston Tea Party, you know, a dramatic and somewhat rebellious event. The heroes of history are all warriors. Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, Attila the Hun. Goodness, how can he be a hero? But okay, maybe more Genghis Khan. Richard Coeur de Lion, the Lionhearted, Napoleon, George Washington, and many others. And geography is largely history in another form, but presented in a similar manner, a history of discovery, investigation, and seizure, followed frequently by wicked and cruel treatment of the inhabitants of the discovered lands. Greed, ambition, cruelty, and pride are the keynotes of our teaching of history and geography. Well, obviously that has to change. And, you know, whatever is said here of nations can in many ways be said of the individual, who many of whom seek to glorify themselves at the expense of others. They always have to rise into a superior position and dominate others, and this, of course, works against cooperation. So again, it's egotism, you know, or egoism, philosophically considered, you know, identifying with the lower personality and seeking to put that forward above and beyond all the other aspects of one's nature, most of which are probably not even sensed, not even registered. And this is where our esoteric education comes into the picture, helping people realize, you know, according to the constitution of man, we might say, that there's a lot more to themselves than they may think. You know, most people just are stopping at the 18 lower subplanes and have no idea of this angelic presence and this presence of their own spirit or of the spiritual triad or monad. These things are just blank and of no cognizance. So we have to bring these things forward and change the thought form if we possibly can. And then, you know, he tells us that he tells us that people are educated to do the wrong thing. He talked about the German youth marching, trampling other people down. They were educated to do that. You know, the child's mind is very receptive, and it does not know how to question unless the child is really extraordinary and has memories or tendencies from the past. So we are educated into war, into Mars, rather than in the cultural possibilities and spiritual possibilities of Venus. So we really have to change our assessment of heroes and of civilization from the Martian model to the Venusian model, which represents our own solar angel and our own higher self. Probably I'm not going to be spending a long time on this today because we do have that coming up at 9:30, let's see, 9:30 finish time and 6:30 GMT. You'll see here in the chat box the link for the Libra Ingress service meditation broadcast. So it's almost like having to end this webinar and then go right into the broadcast. So it will not really be a long time on this webinar. Now, we're working here, you know, in the book Education in the New Age. And he calls for bridging work. It's very interesting. Mercury is the planet of bridging, very much so. It's a fourth-ray planet in its soul sense. The Tibetan is the messenger. He has a very strong Mercurian vibration, I would say. And the whole process of building the Antarkarana is emphasized in the fourth group, the fourth seed group, which are the group of educators, and they come very much under Mercury. I'd see they have the head center as usual, and the Ajna center, and I think the throat center. Those are the three centers, interestingly, all in the head, that through which this group of educators works. But it's very Mercurian, and its task is to bridge the higher to the higher tendencies and interpret the lower in terms of the higher. It is the bridging work which now has to be done, he says, bridging between what is today and what can be in the future, and that's more of a horizontal type of bridging. He says, you know, when the fourth ray types under Mercury are serving, they allow no dangerous gap to appear between the good values of the old and the coming good values as well. The good is preserved because of this fourth ray harmonizing tendency. If during the next 150 years, we're still in the middle of that, aren't we? This was written maybe, I don't know, 70, 80 years ago, and we have another 70 years to go. If during the next 150 years we develop this technique of bridging the many cleavages found in the human family, and in offsetting the racial hatreds and the separative attitudes of nations and people, we shall have succeeded in implementing a world in which war will be impossible. Well, that's an amazing thought, you know. War will be impossible. I just want to kind of emphasize that. And humanity will be realizing itself as one human family, and not as a fighting aggregate of many nations and peoples competitively engaged in getting the best of each other and successfully fostering prejudices and hatreds. I mean, there are many whose power depends upon the fostering of hatreds and their ability to have more of the material goods of life and to fulfill their desires depends upon the fostering of hatred. And right now we see this drama working out in so many of the protests. There are protests, I'll confine myself to the United States for a moment. There are protests which are filled with racial and ethnic hatreds, and there are counter-protesters which are saying we've had enough of hate, no more hate, we need love, you know. So obviously these two kinds of values, one more allied with the narrow sixth ray and the other with the more inclusive second ray, are demonstrating right before our eyes. This is all very practical kind of stuff, you know, and we have to somehow have in our consciousness an awareness of what humanity is really going through, and to build the thought form of solution, as it is said, and to send love out in our thought forms, and to do that successfully, so that subjectively we are fostering love and goodwill, and it will counteract this understandable hatred based on fear and egotism. So anyway, this has been the fostering of prejudices, hatred, etc., been the history of the past. Man has been developed from, and let's trace it here, an isolated animal, prompted only by the instincts of self-preservation, eating and mating, through the stages of, and note how they grow, family life, tribal life, national life, to the point where today a still broader ideal is grasped by him, international unity, or the smooth functioning of the one humanity. Well, we're really moving towards that, and the United Nations is dedicated towards that, and we have also, rising before our very eyes, a dedicated and selfish opposition which wants to retain its own selfish prerogatives based upon the great heresy of separateness and on the competitive model where the purpose is not to help each other, but to excel over each other. This growing idealism is fighting its way into the forefront of human consciousness in spite of all separative enmities. So DK sees a positive future here. It is largely responsible for the present chaos and for the banding together of the United Nations. It has produced the conflicting ideologies which are seeking world expression. We still have a lot of the sixth ray and need it. It has produced a dramatic emergence of national saviors, so-called. We've seen some of them succeed and others fail miserably. And world workers, idealists, opportunists, dictators, investigators, humanitarians. Look at all these words he puts together. All these people motivated by contrasting and often conflicting ideologies. These conflicting idealisms are a wholesome sign, whether we agree with them or not. Now, this is interesting because at least man has the capacity to rise above his purely instinctual nature and can live according to his ideals. They are definitely exploiting the human demand, urgent and right, for better conditions, for more light and understanding, for greater cooperation, for security and peace and plenty in the place of terror, fear, and starvation. So the idealisms, those who espouse them believe that they are leading to a better life. But of course, there are conflicts in these idealisms, and we need a very, very broad, inclusive type of idealism of which the sixth ray is also capable when motivated by love and inclusiveness from the second ray and not by hatred and separation. Well, as I said, I think this is all I'm going to do right now. There are very interesting things being said here, but as I say, we have two programs tonight, and so I think it's important that we move along. So this is the end of Dissipation of Glamour reading number 49, and today is 22 September, right on the cusp of this equinox. It's coming up right away, and we'll be doing this next beginning of Dissipation of Glamour webinar reading number 50. Okay, the Syrian number 50, and it'll be on 29. It'll be a morning program, or it's for some at night, but for us here in Europe, it's a morning program. September 17. Okay, good. Now, so we've been dealing with some very, very practical matters having to do with peace and the use of love to offset hatred. And, you know, this gets back to this thing that is so difficult to understand in some ways. Love your enemies. Turn the other cheek, you know. Love your enemies. Well, how do you see your enemy? Do you see him as a threat to your personality desires, or do you see him as a fellow emanation of the, let's say, the planetary logos, seeking to eventually work out his part in the divine plan and gradually coming to understand other people's parts in the divine plan and therefore being able to work in harmony eventually, even if not there yet? All right. Now, before we get into our meditation, where we seek to get at the roots of separativeness, selfishness, and hatred, we can open up the floor for any discussion. You can, write something down. You can ask something. You can make a statement, whichever way you want to do it, if you want to do it. And so that is now open to us. I mean, we know the situation is going to be resolved. We know there's going to be pain along the way. We know there will inevitably be suffering on this planet of suffering, but we will make it. Brett, do I hear you?
Yes, Frederick has his hand out.
Very good. Okay, Frederick, yes, hi.
Yes, thank you for your interesting reading today.
Thank you.
I feel that the focus is more on the awareness, how to increase the awareness of for awareness of the history, awareness of the geography of all this ecosystem.
And yes. It's a consciousness thing, really, isn't it? And then people like ourselves, we are trying to promote accurate, sensitive, perceptive consciousness of the truth and of the facts. And but there's a lot of deliberate distortion. My gosh, you just look at politics at the moment, and you can see the attempt to mislead people through deliberate distortion. The people know what they're doing. So we need somehow to have a detached point of view, which is very, very inclusive and non-judgmental, and we can look at things as they really did occur and as they should occur. So I think second-rate groups like our own, the realm of consciousness is where we have to develop our understanding and our teaching. I believe so. Yes.
Yes, you mentioned education, so that's part of the procedural memory and awareness, yes,
Yes,
learning by awareness.
the right memory and so forth. And the educational field is largely in the hand of the second ray, the third ray, and the fifth ray. Our modern, if it's spiritual education sometimes, or religious education, the sixth ray. But education for unity is the second ray. Education for evolution and progress, the right use of resources, the third ray, and the factual education, which rules so many of our educational systems, schools, and universities, is presently on the fifth ray. So we need all of those and a good combination of them. But for people like ourselves, we're talking about spiritual education, soul education, education for right human relations. That's what we're talking about. So whatever it takes, each one will have to make up his own mind about how to do it. Yeah. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you, Frederick.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay. Yes. Yes, and thank you for everyone being here. Yes, your thoughts, everybody. These are practical matters, very practical matters. We have to change the way people are taught. We have a lot of hatred being taught. It's found many places. I can barely conceive, that there are military Buddhists at the moment who, are doing things that quite fly in the face of the Buddha's teaching. It's extraordinary. And it's all over. We teach hatred, we teach separation, we teach fragmentation. Basically, we're teaching illusion and glamour. We've got to get rid of that, and we've got to see through it. Okay, Alex, is it?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Alex, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Very well, thank you, Alex. Sorry.
Yeah. Yes. Michael, I'm just looking at the Dina passage that you started with, page 668. Forget not that it is the few in every land who bring about world evil. And I will have you remember also that the will of the masses of the people, unless misled, is towards good and understanding. Talking here in world affairs, stand firmly for good, looking for it in all peoples and races, and thus seek to swell the rising tide of those who aspire to right human relations. Well, that really, I know I've read that many times, but that really jumped out at me because that's true, isn't it? I mean,
From our
this is something that I have been writing about and thinking about and reflecting on for some time, which is that the media is our window to the world, and that is a distorted window. It is a distorted reflection. And I seem to be speaking to people so much that everyone needs to be reminded of this essential fact that basically, it says right here, humanity is towards the good. But that's not what we are thinking, is it? That's not what we're thinking. It's not what we're feeling. You know, and it's engendering a lot of fear and despair. And I've always thought that I'm a bit of a Pollyanna to constantly, you know, come back to this. So it's quite wonderful to see it here, because, you know, they take polls.
Yes.
But no one has polled humanity. And it is my belief that if there wasn't this good will underlying humanity, it would be a lot worse than what we're seeing. So therefore, why are we feeling so, you know, worried?
Well, I think, you know, the tendency of what is thrown in our direction is quite negative. You know, we all read various news feeds, I'm sure, and I try to read from one end of the spectrum to the other, and I can see there's one of the ones I read that just thrives on dishing out negativity and fear. And others have a different kind of idealism, and there's some that are in the middle. We need real education and discernment in the matter of truth. And truth as a value in journalism should be very, very high. But we have owners of these news feeds, owners of these newspapers and so forth, and they have a particular bias. And when you're hired by the newspaper, you better follow that bias, or you better be a type that does follow the bias, or you're just going to get fired. You know, truth is of less value to these owner idealists than it should be. So, all right, well, the truth is coming.
Yes, but we're listening, and we're manipulated, and that, you know, we're manipulated. Yeah. It's modern day propaganda.
Yeah.
But the point is, how do you get the alternative message out there?
You have to have an educated public, you know, an educated public. You really, you know, have to, when demagogues can influence a certain type of individual, but do you think the demagogue can so easily influence the educated disciple, the server of the human race? Maybe not so easily. So we really need to work on the education of the receivers of this kind of material. And right now, sorry, excuse me, in some countries, it's not going in the right direction. The education is going down rather than up. I'm sorry for this. It's one of those days here with the congestion system here.
I'm coughing too.
Well, okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Alex, I know you do a lot of work in your writing to promote the unitive point of view. So keep up.
I'm working on a talk right now, which is called Discerning Truth in the Information Age.
Okay.
From the unreal to the real.
Wow.
So thank you very much for talking about it. But I think the point is that we needn't worry.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should worry a little.
Well, let's just say we have to proceed with some degree of deliberate concern, but not a destabilizing, debilitating worry. That worry never did anything. So, okay. All right, good. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate that. Appreciate your thought. Okay, other anybody who would like to say something? Or write something if you have something that is to be written. I mean, you know, it's a wonder. The Tibetan, what a great author, and he can write that which is useful to us from the most abstruse level, stretching our initiatory possibilities and going way beyond us, all the way right down onto the physical plane. And his range is amazing, and we as students of the Tibetan, you know, probably some of us have tendencies more one way than another, you know, but we have to sort of imitate that range that the Tibetan presents to us, exceedingly esoteric and metaphysical and demanding intuition for understanding, and then also exceedingly practical. And it's not easy, but we can manage, and we'll achieve this as ongoing students of this great master. Okay, is there more? John?
Yes.
John. Is it John?
Yes, a written comment.
Okay, to transform worry to constructive solution. Sounds right to me, John. Sounds right to me. Well, you know, worry, Leadbeater had some interesting things to say about it. You know, he looked at the aura of the individual who was the influence of worry, and it was kind of a very unpleasant aspect to behold, rather gray and jelly-like and incapable, and we take away our ability if we're in the clutches of worry. We have here Frederick telling us that there are some upcoming events. There will be a conference on well-being and education in Paris 2, 3, and 4, 2017, October. And yes, well-being, of course, is vital. And, you know, there again is rather shambolic, ultimately, what it really means to be in the state of well-being. So thank you for that link, those of you who are in Paris, or maybe you can tune in on it in some way if they have a kind of a feed for that event. Well, all around, this is the era of conferences, is it not? So, see, Brett, you can, if can anybody copy that? I guess everybody can copy that, can't they? Or can only I copy it? I'm not sure.
I think so, but I'll put it into the chat box so they can just click on it.
Okay, that's great. This is the era of conferences in which we are presently engaged, and you know, the group Aquarian spirit is coming through under the law of group progress, the fifth law of the soul. So much is being offered. You know, it's just a feast of possibility. We have to be discriminating because we can't run all over the planet and do everything. This is advice to myself. And we have to choose our area of service. But anyway, worry, as you say, concerns the past and the future, and living in the now. Well, that there's a big subject, isn't it? How does one achieve the eternal now and still hold cognizance of the past and anticipation of the future? You know, Master Moria says, for us, there is only the future, you know, so you're supposed to ride forward as if you're a horseman crossing a burning bridge behind you. You know, the only way is forward. Well, it's a very first-rate attitude, but the whole idea is to remain incredibly alert in the present moment with cognizance of where you've come from and where you anticipate going. I think all of these is important, even though the eternal now is the only real thing in terms of time. All right, thanks for that info, Frederick. Appreciate it. Okay, who else? Who else? Anybody?
And Suzanne in the chat box. I'm not sure you got that.
Okay, let me just see what's going on here.
In the questions.
In the questions. Okay, can you read it, Brett? I'm just, before
Suzanne
I...
Suzanne says, worry is living in the past or future. Now is where we must be vigilant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, you know, we can only act in the now. But, of course, you know, the masters will also tell us that the divine plan is written out on certain sheets of an unknown metal, and it's a series of vertical symbols and so forth, and it contains that which is intended to be. So we have to know how to get from where we are now to that which is intended to be using the learning of the past. So in other words, living in the eternal now is not a mindless state at all. It's a state of deep participation with awareness of the flow of cause and effect through time. So, again, I think that it is possible to live in such a way Where we anticipate the future rightly, we learn from the past rightly, and we're acting in the now, and we're not worried. Of course, worry, if you're a fourth rate type like I am, worry has been one of your things all your life, So you have to somehow get rid of that. When I was 3 years old or 4 years old, I had a friend who became a famous psychiatrist now. His mother had names for us. We were both 3 years old or 4 years old, and she called him Whiny Wart, and she called me Worry Wart. So I guess that was showing itself even at that time. But, fortunately, we get to learn a few things and hopefully improve on our skandhas and our past tendencies. Okay, what else, Brett? Where are we now? Anything else?
Nothing for the moment.
That's it for the moment, right? I do want to, I think I want to move on because we do have this important turning point coming up, the Libran service meditation broadcast, for which you do have the link, and Tuya will be leading that, and we have to make a kind of a quick transition from webinars into the broadcast modality. So I think, and it's such an important thing. It's where group consciousness really begins in Libra, and where the golden rule comes in. And as I've said before, I think when you think of the Christ, the head of the hierarchy, and the one who is so responsive to the prince, to the spirit of peace, and is called the Prince of Peace, you just see that Libra is really an important sign in his chart. The masters do have charts. The Tibetan has given them out in certain places, and I think on Makara we may have some things there from some astrological writings, and it's kind of interesting that a number of these people have Pisces rising because they're treading the path of the world's saviors. There's a thought that the Buddha was Sun in Taurus, but Pisces rising. That Master Kuthumi, definitely Sun in Gemini, but Pisces rising. What about the Christ? Is it Sun in Libra, Pisces rising? I don't know. That hasn't been given, but when you see that Pisces rising in a high soul, it's strongly along the world's savior line. Okay. So let us there we go. This is our meditation technique for the group, and it's hard to do the meditations for individuals. We could do that, of course. It's a possibility. Everybody would be working in a slightly different way according to the glamour identified. But for the moment, we are focusing our mind in the light and seeking to offer correctives to this very distressful psychic situation in which humanity finds itself. So we have a little modification as we do this, of course, and we think of each other in all the various countries, but really we are all together in this. And it's as if we're in really one circle of responsiveness to the will of the hierarchy and planetary logos, and we're all connected in our willingness. So just a few moments of silence to realize that connection. And you can feel the, in the silence, the growing unity of the group and its potential effectiveness to work as an instrument for the use of the light to dissipate the glamours which are holding humanity in slavery. So we use our protective formula, you know, it's the divine cross involving the eyes. And we see that cross shining as we do this protective formula together. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. This is the necessary protective identification, as it is dangerous work, and I think that particular group of nine had more trouble than the others. Now we move into the preparatory stages where we're going to unite three lights. So we focus first, drawing up the light of matter, etheric physical, onto the mental plane imaginatively, and there find the light of the lower mind, our reasoning, thinking ability. We merge imaginatively those two lights as one. And then we meditate on soul contact and on the recognition of soul light, often visualized somewhat above the head. And then we fuse the two lesser lights on the mental plane with the light of the soul descending to the mental plane, and the three are visualized as one. That's going to create our beam, made of the vitality of matter, the intelligence of the mind, and the spiritual perception of the soul. And then we're going to say the following mantra, followed by the sacred word. The light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Now we will enter the formula, and the group will together say the following formula. You can say this aloud where you are or go along mentally. And this empowers us, and as we say it, we are visualizing a great searchlight that we have created shining forth onto the astral plane and there ready to confront, weaken, dissipate, destroy the mists, the fogs, the clouds, the miasmas, the dark spaces which prevent us from seeing the truth. Radiance are we, and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the outer, subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And we're going to strengthen our beam with spiritual will, coming from the monad, the triad, Atma, the jewel and the lotus, the synthesis petals, the sacrifice petals, because it is a weapon of light, and we need it to be fortified by spiritual will. And so we say, in recognition of this strengthening, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. And so our group, weapon of light, illuminating, dissipating, destroying, is focused on the glamours of hatred arising from the great illusion of separateness, the great heresy of separateness. They're always found together. Fear, egoism, hatred. And now we're going to use these words of power as we throw the light into the dark spaces of the astral plane, having to do with this glamour of irrational repulsion based on egotism and fear. And so we say aloud together, the power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour of hatred from affecting humanity. And the power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. Now we're going to work with these three words of power in the silence, and we're going to see the light penetrating the glamour and producing its weakening and its dissipation. So in this silence, intensity of purpose, as the work is seen proceeding. We are clearing the astral plane of the miasma of hatred. The sun of light shines forth, helping humanity to find the better ways to solve its problem, its problems. The sun of love shines forth, inducing goodwill and cooperation. The sun of the will to good shines forth, making humanity responsive to the divine plan and eventually the divine purpose. We're clearing the atmosphere of the astral plane of these undesirable conditions, so a higher aspirational desire nature can arise and lower desire can be banished. And so we, having done this again, we withdraw our beam back onto the mental plane. We turn the searchlight off for the moment. We understand mentally what we have done. And we're going to sound together to confirm this, sound the Om 3 times together. Thank you, everybody. In our Ask program tomorrow, we have the Soul of Nations meditation, and then the Attracting Money for Hierarchical Purposes. And in just a few minutes, maybe 20 minutes or so, we're going to begin our broadcast service meditation for the Libra Ingress, the Libra Equinox, a very important turning point in the planetary cycle. So thank you for being with us, and this program will, you have the link for the Libra activity in the chat box, I believe, if you haven't already seen it, or you can simply use your Ask Comprehensive link and you'll get there. All right, we'll see you soon. Many blessings, and thank you for attending, for participating. Bye-bye.